Welcome to Bedknobs and Broomflakes, the podcast that talks about witches, man-witches, warlocks, sorcerers, and other magic practitioners in movies, television, comic books, books, and just about everything. Sorry, this show will include spoilers. You've been warned. My name is Linda, but this week you can call me Cheezane. I'm a superstar.
And my name is Jane, and you can call me the Stardust of Light. Because why the hell not? I'm just going to jump on the bandwagon of names now. I just got to come up with something. No promises.
Hooray.
Promise not guaranteed in all 50 states.
That's right. Today we are discussing Neil Gaiman's delightful fairy tale, Stardust.
Yay! Books. We have a book we read.
We do read. It's true. It's not all just movies, I promise.
We need to do a TV show at some point as well.
Yeah, and I've already got some comics lined up too, but I'm pretty excited.
Yeah.
And I know Jane and I were talking about it earlier. We both have a similar beginning to our love for Neil Gaiman. My introduction, both of our introductions, I guess, was with Good Omens, and I was at the time, like, my friend suggested it, and I was familiar with Terry Pratchett, but not so much with Neil Gaiman, and I remember being able to tell exactly who was writing whom. I just fell in love with it. But then back in college, I had an ex who got me started on Neil Gaiman's other stuff by having me read Sandman. And I just fell in love with it. And I couldn't get enough of him and his stuff. And when I met him a couple years ago, he was doing a reading for Ocean at the End of the Lane. And he was doing a reading from that and Fortunately the Milk. And he was just such a delightful person, such a lovely, humble person. I think he's probably the best celebrity I've ever met. And I've met many because of, you know, conventions and such. But we had to wait in line for a couple hours just to meet him. And I wasn't letting the opportunity pass me by. And when we finally got up to him, I said, you know, thank you so much. You've brought me back into comics as an adult, and you've reignited my passion for storytelling. And he took my hand and he was like, thank you so much. That's such a lovely thing to say. And I remember Donnie, my brother, and Carlos, my husband, were there. They were just kind of snickering because they knew I'm fucking dying. And I'm just so, so pleased that I did not utter some, like, weird noise I could never recreate, throw up on myself and pass out. And, like, you know, luckily, you know, hopefully it would be in that order. But I was just so shocked with myself that I didn't. But after he took my hand, it was just kind of, here in Neil Gaiman.
There's a small part of me when you mention that. I'm starting to think if there's some sort of gathering of celebrities where they share, like, the weirdest, like, fan experiences they've ever had. Well, not, like, the bad ones, not, like, the creepy ones, but the ones where just sort of like, yeah, I think they just kind of fell to the floor and fainted, and their loved ones had to drag them off.
Oh, you met Linda. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that group meets at 2.
What about you, Jane? What was your introduction?
Similar to yours, I had a girlfriend at the time who loaned me a couple of books. One of them was Good Omens. And I remember reading it, thinking it was, like, a really great book, but I'm a horrible human being sometimes. I don't always pay attention to the authors that I'm reading. If somebody just gives me a book and be like, try this, I'm like, oh, okay. So I never really made that connection. And then years later, I was dating this guy, And he gave me American Gods. And I fell in love with that, and I started reading Sandman, and a whole soiree of Neil Gaiman's work. So that was more my introduction to his work. Very similar, except I didn't meet Neil. I've never met Neil Gaiman. So, yeah, that's my limitation to that story. I don't have any near-peen pants storytelling to do. And I am under the belief that that is one story that somebody has probably said. I'm not saying it's going to be Neil Gaiman, but I have a feeling there's some celebrity out there who said, like, yeah, a fan of mine just, I didn't know what to do. and I felt really bad for them, I'm sure.
Well, actually, I heard a story from, why am I blanking on her name? Sarah, the girl who plays the voice in Wreck-It Ralph and
Sarah Silverman.
Yeah, Sarah Silverman.
You're welcome. At first I thought you were just gonna like go blank on the show you were also gonna name, but like, well, I really cannot help you. If you're like, I can't remember the name of the show, I can't remember the name of the person, it's like, yep, I'm no help here.
No, I heard a story from her where she was saying that she once met a fan at like a Comic-Con thing. I think it might have been San Diego Comic-Con. And the fan just, like, he was wearing the, I think he was wearing the Hulk hands or something like that. And, you know, he was so overwhelmed to meet her. He didn't really know what to do. And so she was like, oh, cool, Hulk hands. And he hit her.
Oh, Jesus.
So, you know, I try to think of it in terms of, like, well, at least I didn't hit them.
Oh, poor guy. It's the little things we do.
Right.
The ones we don't do, I guess.
But, yeah, so it was actually when I met Neil Gaiman, it was really awesome because opening for him, it was in Seattle, and opening for him was Jason Webley, who's sort of like a, I guess he's a local sensation, but he's really, really amazing. And I've gone to a couple of his tomato camps, and those are a lot of fun. He's a great like live performer. But he also introduced him to his now wife, Amanda Palmer. Oh. So that was pretty cool. Yeah. So anyway, this book was published in 1997, and I was surprised to find out that it was not only was it like published with illustrations by Charles Vess, but it was published by DC Comics. And I was pretty sure that was, you know, looking at the information for the comic version, but no, it looks like the book was actually published by DC Comics.
Huh.
So.
Oh, that's an interesting bit I didn't know about.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, he was really big in comics at the time. So
I mean, it makes sense that it's DC.
Yeah.
Just because Sandman has some play into the DC universe, though very vague. Yeah. So those things where, like, especially when you're reading it, it's like, oh, I recognize that character, but you have to also have some knowledge of the DC universe to recognize that character.
Like John Constantine, another one of the I knew you were going to mention comics. Constantine. Yeah, that's another one of the comics. I was thinking of Hippolyta or
Hippolyta.
Yeah.
That was my first go-to. I was like, she's going to mention Constantine, isn't she?
Because I love him, and I think he was in the first episode. Or the first first issue.
Okay, real quick, dive out of into Constantine. Are you watching any of the CW shows, like superhero shows?
I stopped watching a while ago. Me and my husband just kind of fell off.
Okay, well, they did do a Crisis on Infinite Earth, and Constantine came back. The actor who was in the he came back for an episode, and not only was he there, they also got the guy who plays Lucifer from the show Lucifer to come back. It was like one of those moments where I was like, oh, this is an amazing thing. I had known, I would have told you earlier, because I was like, oh, this is really cool. Like, they got the guy to play Lucifer to come in, and they have this really great, like, back and forth. It's like, cool. But it's like, and now I've upset Linda.
Damn it. Now I gotta watch all of them all, like, again, and... because, I know,
I'll need to understand some of the characters and what's going on in their lives, kind of.
Well, I know that Hellblazer and Lucifer are, at least like in the comics, they're closely intertwined. Mm-hmm. But, and Lucifer showed up in Sandman too.
Oh, well, yeah, he's a big story arc.
So. Yeah. Oh my God, that was such a good one too.
And the Lucifer comics were good too. Okay, we're going to get into comics. Yeah. Anyways, let's talk about the book.
Yeah, okay.
So, real quick, I just want to give everybody an idea of the story. I'm hoping most of you guys have read it, or else this is all going to be new to you, and we're going to be... I'm sorry if it confuses you if you haven't read the book yet. So, the story is kind of three stories... told, all the events are happening at the exact same time, but it's three different points of view, with a opening kind of long prologue to the events that lead into the main story. Mm. So you've got the first story, which is very much a romance story, that whole entire, like, I hate you, now I love you sort of feel with Tristrain. I'm never going to get used to saying his name, by the way. I really want to read it as Tristan, but it has a R between the T and the A at the end. I'm just like, oh, I've really been reading this name wrong this
whole time. I was so sure that it was a typo when I first realized it, but then, like, I noticed every other time it's Tristan, and it's like, how the hell are you supposed to say that?
I know, it's like the R does not want to come out of my mouth when I read that name.
It just sounds funny, too, like Tristan.
Yes, yeah, so I think Tristan in the movie is yeah, I think in the movie, yes, they do kind of, it sounds like Tristan. I think you are right. What you're about to say was it does really sound like Tristan, or that, or else my ears were just like not picking up on it at all.
Yeah, I think in the movie they were just like, no, fuck that. He's gonna be Tristan.
Our tongues do not make that shape.
Yeah, we cannot do this though. Tristan.
But basically it's his story and his quest to win the girl, the pretty girl from the village, as one young boy does, and go on a quest to find the item that he believes will win her heart. The other story is the story, of course, about the witches. And they are also after the exact same thing that Tristan's after, for different reasons. Completely horrible, horrible different reasons. And the last story that's happening is the story of a very disturbing fight for a throne between three brothers. And they also want kind of the same thing, but it's what's attached to that thing. And this thing in question is a star, that it takes the shape of a human girl.
Yeah, and I love the brothers because they're named after the order in which they were born. Like, you've got Primus, Secundus, Septimus. I just love it.
It's sort of like, look, I don't know if you're going to live past infancy. I'm just trying to count my children. And to be fair, he's kind of a dick about how he counts his children. Because I remember reading that one section where the story of the succession thing is these brothers, there's seven of them, and their father's dying. And the story of how the brothers, or how one of them becomes king, is the brothers all have to kill each other. So the father killed, like, all, what, 12?
Yeah, I think he said he had 11 or 12 brothers. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I think I know the movie said 12, and I had just watched the movie. But so, and he has seven sons, and he's disappointed that he has three still living sons on his deathbed, because that's how you become king in this world, is you have to kill all of your brothers. But he does make a snide mention going, like, I had 8 children, 7 sons, and I'm like, yeah, you're not going to mention that you have a daughter, do you? Yeah. He's like, I know what that means. It's not
he's going, like, I have 7 sons. Yeah, that's one thing I liked, like, versus the movie version. Because, like, the movie version, you know, he calls out for his daughter, and they say she's not here, and, you know, she was taken a while ago. But I like how in the book they just don't mention her. It was except for hinting. Sorry.
Sorry. That was one of the things, and I think we'll talk about this more when we probably will end up doing a movie versus the book kind of comparison when we look at the movie. Because, yes, that was one of the things that I liked more about the book, was it also led more to some of the surprises at the end versus it's really spelled out so blatantly in the movie. It's like, I don't think the audience is this dumb. And it felt like they thought we were going to be this dumb and not being able to figure this out.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was a little unfortunate.
I do kind of want to talk a little bit about the beginning, because the beginning kind of sets us up for what happens. And it happens with Tristan, okay, I'm calling him Tristan. I don't care. My mouth will not have that R at all. It's a silent R in my mind now.
Okay. Fair enough. I'll allow it.
So it starts out with Tristan's father, Dustin. Dustin, I can say that. I'm good at that. And his character is... He's just kind of lame, I guess. I was reading him. It's like
That's fair.
He's so overly practical. Like, when he's talking about dating or seeing the girl who he's courting, Daisy. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he's definitely not going to go for the prettiest girl, who they do mention at one point, who I think are compared to Quinn from Daria. When I was reading, I was like, she's like Quinn from Daria. But, you know, he's dating this girl. He's like, she's practical. She's really down to earth. And, you know, behind it, like, she has a conversation with her mother. And it's clear that she's like, I kind of want to kiss me. And he's just kind of, like, not keeping his distance. He's just lame, I guess. Yeah. I don't know how else to put it. I don't know how you felt about him. Because I was like, I don't need him to be romantically extravagant. Like, even, like, okay, yeah. So I think the best example of this was when he's, so part of the story, to also recap, is there's the small town which exists in our world, and then there's a wall that divides what I'm going to refer to as more of like a fairy realm, mm-hmm. So a magical realm. And every 9 years, the people of our world get to cross over and go to a big, huge market that the fairy realm holds, and they can buy stuff and trade if they want any of our junk.
I think it's 8 years. Every 8 years, I think?
Is it? Oh, well. I thought it was matter. 9. Yeah, it's either way. And so Dunstan goes into the market, and I liked his goal. It was, he was going to try to find something small and inexpensive for Daisy. I read that. I'm like, he shops the way that I shop for my coworkers when we have a white elephant gift exchange. Right?
Small and inexpensive.
And I did want to mention one thing before he goes into the market. That Harry, the Harry man that shares the barn space with Dunstan while everybody else is being put up. I like the fact that he says, like, the hairy thing stopped talking, turned around, farted, scratched itself, and went to sleep. And I'm like,
yes. I was like, I feel this.
I understand. I know what that's like. Yes. Sometimes I have a small child come into bed and lay down next to us, keep me up for a little bit, and then roll over and go to sleep and fart.
Well, I love that he never gets a name.
I know, I think we referred to him a couple of different things based off of, like, things he's holding and stuff, but yeah, the small hairy man is what I refer to him after a while.
Sounds like a euphemism for something.
I don't know. Can I ask you a question? What do you think was Dunstan's heart's desire? Because he was given the heart's desire as a gift for letting the other man stay in his house. And I was reading that going, like, so was his heart's desire to meet the pretty girl at the stall? Was his heart's desire to get boned? Was it to have a son? I was like, what exactly are we going for here?
Well, that's a really good question. And I think that, well, I mean, I guess it's subject to, interpretation. You know, who's reading it. Yeah, but I thought that it was, you know, a family and all that, but it could have just been getting boned.
Yeah, I mean, he does end up with a family. He does end up marrying Daisy afterwards and has a daughter with Daisy. You know, and of course he knocks up the other chick that he ends up with. But right. It was like one of those moments where I was like, I don't know, because I also feel bad for her if
yes. You know, this,
I mean, I feel bad for her because in general, you know, she's a prisoner, and I don't know if she's using him or if she's like, look, I'm going to have a child on you. This child will someday grow up, and hopefully it will somehow set me free. It's like,
Okay. That or else it's like it's some sort of weird spell that they both ended up under, which is like, man, I don't know. It was one of these. Plus, the other thing about the Heart's Desire, he said that it will continue. The man who gave him the Heart's Desire charm was, mm-hmm. it will last for you and your children until the day that the man died. I don't remember him having a name either. So the man who shared Dunstan's house. And
I was meeting Tristan.
Oh yeah. Later on. But I was thinking like, as I was reading that, going like, I hope to God that none of Dunstan's like future generations ever want something really horrible. Like, my mind immediately went to like, the next Stalin kind of writes stuff. This is where my brain goes, by the way.
I would really like a real live, like, Hydra that would just, like, that would just destroy the world and everything we know. Like, that would be really cool to see. Well, yeah, I figure, like, it's, for Tristan, it's, like, that sense of adventure and, also probably to bone down.
Yeah, there's a lot of desires to bone.
Yeah. And I just kind of figured that Una, the mother of Tristan was that, I mean, I felt like she was just kind of like, you know what, I've been a prisoner for a long time. I would really like to get it in while I can. You know? Like, I felt like she just wanted to have a good time.
Yeah, it's a possibility. I was like thinking about that, going like, so what? Especially after he left her, it was like, so she wasn't his heart's desire, or yeah, I don't know. That's why it was one of those things where I was like, huh, I wonder what it was truthfully or truly.
Mm-hmm.
Although I do have one little thing, because obviously Una, as the prison woman is called, and mm-hmm. later on. Spoilers, as we've already warned, she is the missing daughter of the king who has died. She has a baby, Tristan, and mm-hmm. they deliver the baby to the other side of the wall for Dunstan to raise, along with Daisy, who is probably not pleased about this at all.
No, I feel bad for her.
I felt bad for her, but at the same time, I'm like, I have this weird feeling that she probably treated him like crap as well. Like, there's, like, that look that she sometimes has where it's like, yeah, I know that. I know that look. That's the look of, I am just tolerating you. And I know it wasn't, like, the written page, but at the same time, I'm reading it going, like, I feel that seething. Sort of like, somebody had him before me. But I was always wondering, like, why didn't the woman who was keeping Una a slave keep the baby as well?
Dishwater Sal.
Yeah,
I was wondering about that, too. But, I mean, I guess she didn't have any use for a baby and probably didn't want to, you know, have another mouth to feed.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. It was like a small part of me going like, hey, you just doubled. Economics, Jane was like, you gave away an asset.
Yeah, but only until, like, I mean, he would only really be able to help when he was, you know, older. I mean,
yeah,
baby can't really do anything.
True, yes, there would be some time taken away. It was like, well, since I was like, oh, well, I mean, moving the story along.
Although, for that matter, she could have sold the baby or probably used the baby in some sort of, like, potion.
She could have been a really horrible person. Yes, she could.
Thankfully, she wasn't. But, yeah, so
we got grown-up Tristan as the beginning of the story.
Yeah.
Trying to woo Victoria, who is really having none of his shit. Can I just... Like, the way he talks to her, I was feeling uncomfortable reading it. I was like, please stop.
Well, and we'll talk about it in the next full episode, but, you know, in the movie, they kind of make her out to be a bitch. But in the book, she's just like, she's not a bitch. She's in love with somebody that she's seeing, and, you know, which happens to be Mr. Monday, the shopkeep who's employing Tristan. And he's a little older, But, you and know, widowed. Of course.
I like how they widowed. Talk about how he's widowed.
Yeah.
And but at one point they talk about how he probably won't want to have so much sex because he's older and widowed.
Yeah.
Victoria and her friends are just talking about how it's like, oh, he's older. It's like, he won't want to have sex with us too much. Jesus Christ.
Well, and, you know, it like, in the movie, there's the one antagonist who's, like, I guess Victoria's boyfriend, who's younger and...
More age-appropriate, I guess, would be...
Yeah.
But and, at the same time, it's, mm-hmm. yeah.
They kind of make her, like, not just a bitch, but, like, also kind of vain, and, like, she's interested with this guy because he's handsome and...
wealthy.
He's
traveled and everything, and
exactly. But in the book, Mr. Monday's older, and, you know, like, she actually genuinely seems to be in love with him and wants to marry him.
And she really is throwing up all the "I am seriously not interested in you, kid." like she could not be more clearer.
Yeah, Patricia's like, "Oh, when you yet?"
I think the best part that he says is, "I will slay a polar bear and bring you its head."
Yes.
I'm like, oh God. And now it sounds even worse with climate change.
Right.
It's like, dude, they have enough to do with. Icebergs beat you to that.
Aww. But she never promises him marriage. Like in the movie. Like in the book, she actually says, quote, "If you bring me that star," said Victoria, "the one that just fell, not another star, then I'll kiss you. Who knows what else I might do?"
Yeah, in my opinion, I was like, you realize that she's sending him to his death, right? Like, she's seriously trying to get rid of him.
Well, and she feels really, really bad about it at the end, too. Oh, because she's just like, oh my God, I thought you died, and I thought it was all my fault, and I couldn't marry Mr. Monday until, or was it Mr. Sunday?
Monday. It's Monday. Okay, that's good. Part of the prophecy to release his mother.
Right, because in American Gods, it's Monday, too, so I'm, like, making sure I'm not confusing them.
No, it's...
But, good. But she's like, yeah, I couldn't marry him because I felt so bad, because I thought that I basically killed you.
Yeah, so no, I kid when I say she was trying to lead him to his death, but she was trying to basically say, I am going to give you the most impossible task on the face of the earth, that this will mm-hmm. never happen.
Yeah, she's just trying to get rid of him.
I
mean, ladies, you know what that's like, right? I mean...
And he is very pushy. Like, yes. I was like, God, Tristan, please lay off of this.
Yes. And I know I personally have had one of those exes that, you know, I broke up with him and he said, I'm going to kill myself if you don't take me back. And so I was reading this thinking about him like, oh, Jesus, just like, you know, what do you do to just
By the way,
tell
everybody,
somebody?
That's abusive. I would just like to point out, public service announcement, that is abuse. That is an emotional manipulation. That is abuse. Run.
It's terrible. And he hit his kitchen counter so hard that he broke his fist. And, like, it's just, like, it was really fucked up. And I was just in high school, so I'm just like, dude, like, what am I supposed to do? Because, like, he's making me feel bad, like, making me feel responsible for, you know, his life and all that. But, like, I don't want to be with somebody who I don't want to be with, and I don't want to be, you know, unhappy and... And it's fucking high school, like, you know, these aren't supposed to be that serious. But it kind of made me feel like that with Victoria and Tristan in the beginning, where she's just like, just fuck off already, man.
Like, yeah, it's, yeah, I like I said, I got so cringy towards us, like, oh, please stop. And then, yeah. And yeah, then he finally sets off on his journey. I'm just like, oh, thank God. I didn't want to hear any more of that. I was like, nope. And then they move into the story of the seven brothers, or in this case, the three living brothers and the four ghost brothers. And no, do not dare. Don't even start on this tangent. We've talked about this earlier. I don't want to hear about it.
Shout out to Ghost Brothers. Okay. Okay. I'll bite my tongue.
Yeah, so the four... by the way, again, being a ghost, just linger there, must really suck. They're saying they're all making commentary about, like, how each of them got killed by the other brother, and it's like, oh, God, you just have to stay there and just watch them do everything, eat food, talk to their loved ones. I'd say bone as well, because...
I was gonna say, and kill each other.
Yeah, well, yes, and that happens. The other brothers slowly do start to kill each other. Although I was curious, when the father's laying dying, he sends one of his sons to go and look out the window, and they send his other ones over. I was like, do they have to kill each other in secret? Because it would have been so easy just to take two daggers back, dead.
Yes. Well, I think in the movie, one of them...
yeah, in the movie it starts out with four brothers instead, and one of them does get pushed out.
That is one case where I love the movie version way better than the book, where he tells him, go look out, because I think it was Rupert Everett, and he, like, just saunters in, like, the handsome brother, and he's, like, so gallant, and the dad tells him, go look out the window or whatever it is, and or in the balcony, and he says, what do you see? And he says, I see the kingdom. And he said, what else do you see? And he says, my kingdom? and one of his brothers, like, he motions, the dad motions to one of the other brothers, who comes up and just pushes him over. And I love that. And I like that better than the book.
It definitely, at least for the movie, it's a good way of establishing what the hell is going on, like why there are three, like, ghostly or four ghostly figures just standing over their father's bed.
Yeah.
So I think that was a good establishment, because in the book, they're obviously more narrating, like, oh, and he killed me with this, and he killed me with that. It's like, God.
Right.
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that I loved... the imagery that Neil Gaiman painted with this whole story. Like, I highlighted a couple parts where, like, he says, quote, the autumn twilight turned into deep and early night as they walked. Tristan could smell the distant winter on the air, a mixture of night mist and crisp darkness and the tang of fallen stars. It's just stuff like that. I just, like, it's kind of half poetry, you know.
It is a great visual, like, mental picture, because it really just sets you into where you are and kind of the almost unearthliness of the area. And I agree with you. Like, it is a really great way of setting the scenery.
And that's one thing I love about him, is that he really puts you there and makes you feel like you're in the middle of it all.
Oh, yeah. Although there is one thing, speaking of painting a picture, I can't remember where this was, but at some point, like, I wrote a note down here where somebody described something as wide as a church door, and I said, like, what an odd unit of measurement. I was like, what are we talking about here?
That makes me think of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy book, where he's... It flew much unlike a brick. Stuff like that. I love stuff like that.
I mean, honestly, it more reminded me of this one scene in Family Guy where they're doing grocery shopping and everything's like a weird, you know, measurement, like a pallet of like string cheese, a drum of grape jelly, a piano of Christmas or something. Yeah. It's like, what? And yet she says, where are you getting these units of measurements from? That's kind of what made me think of. I just started giggling to myself when I was reading this. I had to write it down. I was like, I gotta remember this, because that was like the weirdest thing I ever read.
But I love, like, in this book, it's just one of those things that I love about Neil Gaiman, where, like, he has a bunch of other tiny little stories to kind of like describe the world that it is. Like, toward the beginning, he talks about Sorry, this is a long quote, so I'm going to try to get through it quickly.
Oh, you actually recorded quotes. I didn't. I recorded little snippets of, like, little pieces that I kind of liked. But I have one also that's kind of like a short story or a little tiny snippet story.
It might be the same thing.
Maybe it will be.
Is this, quote, "A field mouse found a fallen hazelnut and began to bite into the hard shell of the nut with its sharp, ever-growing front teeth, not because it was hungry, but because it was a prince under an enchantment who could not regain his outer form." Yes! "He could not regain his outer form until he chewed the nut of wisdom. But its excitement made it careless, and only the shadow that blotted out the moonlight warned it of the descent of a huge gray owl who caught the mouse in its sharp talons and rose again into the night. The mouse dropped the nut, which fell into the brook, and was carried away to be swallowed by a salmon. The owl swallowed the mouse in just a couple of gulps, leaving it just its tail trailing from her mouth, like a length of bootlace. Something snuffled and grunted as it pushed through the thicket. A badger, thought the owl, herself under a curse, and only able to resume her rightful shape if she consumed a mouse who had eaten the nut of wisdom, or perhaps a small bear."
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, wow, that is a story out there.
Yeah, right. I love that. Like, it's like everybody has been cursed into some other shape.
And speaking actually of stories out there, so one of the things that and this is a comparison from the book to the movie that I think I want to go into more detail when we talk about the movie, is all the prophecies. Like, what helps Una escape her capture. In the movie, they just kind of write off as, oh, her captor just has to die. But this one's, like, really specific and has to do with Victoria marrying Mr. Monday. And then there's the other one, and this has to do with the main witch who's chasing them, is that she doesn't die. Like, a descendant of Tristan's is going to have to, or one of them will have to actually kill her. And she even says that, what is it, the... I can't remember the wood, but the wood that will slay me hasn't even been grown from the tree. And, like, they even point out, like, and at that time, a squirrel picked up an acorn and went off to hide it and forget about it. And it's like, oh, well, that's cute.
Yeah, the witch is, her name's Lamia, which is the same name of the demon from the movie Drag Me to Hell.
I'm just going to let you pronounce all the names in here, by the way. You're better with names.
But she is part of the Lilim, which I looked up a little bit about the Lilim, because it says that she's the witch queen, oldest of the Lilim, and had to look them up, found out that they are said to be in Kabbalistic and teachings and Jewish folklore. They're said to be the children of Lilith, who was the, I guess, you know, depending on the stories that you're reading, she was a very, like, sexual, pleasurable manifestation of the goddess. But also she was supposed to be in the Bible and... Now, Jane, I know you were talking about this earlier. She was, like, the first wife of Adam?
Yeah, the idea was, this is, there's a folklore. I don't know, I don't know the extent of where this came from, but I've read it, which is, Lilith was the first wife of Adam, and my understanding is that God kind of made her the same way that, he made Adam. You know, instead of, like, when Eve came along, he took a part of Adam, a rib from Adam and made Eve. But in this case, Lilith rebelled against the idea that she had to be subservient to Adam, because in her mind, you know, they're both equal. They're both created separately, you know, so it's her body, her rights and everything. And there's like a bunch of little stories about how, like, she wants to, like, have sex with him on top, and that angers God. It's that's like one of my phones, like, oh, this is lovely. And so she's cast out, and she becomes the mother of demons, and is usually regarded as, again, a very promiscuous person. Side note, Eve is technically the third wife, according to this folklore. The second wife, God creates in front of Adam, and he starts with, like, the very base, like, cellular structure. So Adam literally watches this new woman, like, go from, like, bones to muscle to sinew to tissue to nervous centers. Like, he watches this person, like, basically become a person. Mm. And he's so grotesque by the process that he just rejects her flat out. He's like he's, he saw, like, you know, like underneath her skin and stuff. It's like, nope. And then the third one, you know, Eve came from Adam. So Eve right. is a part of Adam and he's a lesser, blah, 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 Bible stuff.
So, and God was just like,
finally,
okay, how about this one? You happy now?
Yeah, I think Neil Gaiman actually tells this story in Sandman. If he doesn't, I think it might have been told in Lucifer, because I do remember seeing it also portrayed in comics. Mm-hmm. But I remember reading the myth someplace. I just can't remember what it was fully attributed to. Somebody did say Jewish folklore, but mm-hmm. I wasn't going to say that with pure, you know, I know it's this. I'm not completely assured that it's that, but I do remember reading that story. Thinking like, oh, that's a interesting story.
Well, I love that. Like he's one of those authors that does his research, and he used to be a reporter. He was a journalist. And in London, and he said that he used to take the tube into work, and there he read some of Alan Moore's comics, like Swamp Thing, and he was just so pleasantly surprised that there was, like, adult comics that weren't, like, you know, all about sex, you know, like, not the naughty adult comics, but... He just, you know, he thought, like, well, you know, I could be doing this. And that's how we got Neil Gaiman. So, yay.
Well, he also, which I was delighted by, is he mentions Boudica just briefly in a sentence.
Oh, yes.
And I got so happy. Oh,
I love Boudica. And while we're at it, shout out to Arjun from Deep Into History, because he has an amazing episode about Boudica.
Yeah,
it's so freaking good.
Yeah, I know that there's a TV show that features Boudica, and at some point I'm going to check that out. I don't know if it's well received or not, though. So, and of course, sometimes they don't always do well on their historical figures.
Well, there was a series basically about historical badass women, and I think it was hosted by Xena.
I thought you were about to say it was on Drunken History. I were like, oh, okay.
Totally accurate. But yeah, I think it was on, I found it on Netflix, and it was really good. And that's actually what taught me about Boudica, because I had no idea.
I remember, I think it was Stuff You Missed in History class that actually talked about Boudica for me. So that was my first introduction to her. And it's just unfortunate there's not as much as I wish there was written about her. You know, it's not like there's great tomes written about her the way there is about, like, Caesar and Augustus.
Yeah.
You know, the people she was, the country that she was kind of fighting against. Not exactly the same time period, but.
Yeah, listeners, after you binge all of our episodes, check out Deep Into History. Because he has a really great episode about her. But moving on to the story.
Yeah, it's...
Sorry.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to, like, hold off on comparing, like, book to movie, because I did, like, basically finish reading and watching the movie at about the same time. So there were things that they left out in the movie that I was really disappointed in. And the seer
wood. Yeah, like the small guy, the small hairy guy.
Oh, yeah, the small hairy guy was one thing. And then the seer wood plot lead in. And
yes.
Yes, I love this. It was such an interesting way of creating an idea that, yes, this world has obviously psycho killer princes and witches. But also, like, in general, like, the land around them was dangerous. You know, there's the seer wood, which basically, like, traps people in their woods. And the trees themselves, like, eat, you know, living creatures alive. And the lion attacking the unicorn. Those are, like, just really cool moments where I was like, oh, this is actually, like, a really fascinating world building they've got going on here. And
It's also, like, it's an introduction to the fact that Tristan has this, like, magical sense of direction.
Yeah, it's kind of hints because, you know, they, I mean, obviously, like, in the book, you're obviously pointing out that he is going to be half something because he's half human, half mm-hmm. part of this realm. And it was one of the things where it's like, yeah, no, he did inherit something when he's in this realm. Because they even point out that he can figure out where everything is in their realm, but he can't mm-hmm. figure out where anything is in our world.
Yeah, on the other side of the wall. So it's
like, point out London. He's like, I don't know, somewhere south. So, well, where's the other place? He's just like, point, he's there.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, it's also a great hint that Tristan is related to Una and to the princes, the homicidal princes that are fighting for to be king. Because it says, quote, he wished he was, well, this is from Septimus, by the way, that one of the homicidal princes.
The most homicidal, let's be fair, like there's,
yes.
There's one who's clearly more of a dick than the others.
Yes. Fair. It says, quote, he wished he was more of a magician. He had some of the locating ability that ran patchily in his family line. So there you go. You have like the locating ability that ran patchily in his family line, and a few minor magics he had learned or stolen over the years, but nothing that would be of use to him now when he needed to invoke floods or hurricanes or lightning strikes. So it says right there that, like, you know, that's where Tristan got his locating ability from his family.
Yeah. And speaking of the brothers, I kind of just want to touch on that. Basically what happens, obviously, is all the brothers end up dead, either by their own hands, or at one point the witch ends up killing one of the brothers. Yes. Which, I like the fact that that basically ties Septimus to avenging his brother that he was going to kill anyway. Yes! It's like, oh, it wasn't by your hand, so guess what you have to do, asshole.
And that was another part of the difference between the book and the movie. Actually, yeah, that was one thing I liked about, another thing I should say that I liked about the book versus the movie. Because in the movie, he's after the witch because he's sure that the witch has the stone that they're all trying to find. But in the book, he's kind of pissed off because now he's got this, like, he has a side quest because
he has to slay 10 sheep and shear them. Yes.
He has to avenge his brother. Like, tradition dictates that he has to avenge him. And so that's why
he ends up getting killed. That's what's really mm-hmm. great about it, in the process of, like, going, like, okay, I'm going to wait here. I'm going to wait, like, and see if she leaves. I know the person who killed my brother. And then I'll be done. I can go back. And she ends up killing it, which I honestly, because they mentioned, I like how she kills him because, mm-hmm. you know, she's he's the poisoner. He's poisoned a good chunk of his family. And that's why most of them spend their time not eating any food not prepared by them. And he ends up getting poisoned by, like, a snake that she keeps around her wrist. And I was like, oh, yes. That's actually really, it's very appropriate.
Yes. Yeah. I liked that too.
Do you know what we haven't talked about yet?
Mm-mm.
Can you guess, at least? We haven't talked about the star.
Duh.
Damn it.
Well, yeah, I love Yvaine. She's a little distant, I guess. And the way that Neil Gaiman describes
I also, this one's where I was like, I didn't really have an opinion one way or the other between Claire Danes' performance as a star in the movie versus the book. Because honestly, it's like, in both cases, I think she has every right to feel the way she's feeling in this entire situation. I'm like, you have the right to be pissed. You have the right to be angry. I would be too.
Mm-hmm. And in both of them, both versions, I love that she's like, you know, he says, I'm going to take you to Victoria and she's going to want to marry me when she sees you. And she says, oh yeah, nothing makes a better wedding gift than a kidnapped woman.
I remember that. I love the snark. I love snark so much.
Yes, I love that so much because I was like, girl, I feel ya. And, like, he could have just grabbed some weird-looking rock, you know, for all Victoria knew.
Like I said, that's the one thing that I was like, I'm totally fine with Claire Danes' performance. Everything makes sense mm-hmm. there. And the book, I think the one thing, I'm really trying hard not to do too much book-movie comparisons because I'm really going to dig into that when we do the movie. But I think that the time frame for them building up their affections for each other make more sense in the book versus the movie. Because the movie is supposed to take, like, a week. And in the book, it's like, I mean, they're going on, like, traveling. At one point, they get picked up by that ship in the sky, which is very different from the movie. But that was also the one part where I was like, I would have liked to have seen their adventures, because he kind of makes like a one mm-hmm. or two paragraph going like, when did they do this? When did they do that? When did they do this? And I was like, what? This sounds interesting. He's telling tales, he's saying songs, but it also makes sense as to then how they were able to build up that relationship versus like a week of knowing somebody. That more sounds like Stockholm Syndrome. Although to be fair, in both cases, it kind of is. She is kind of his prisoner.
That's fair. That's fair. And I like he describes the stars in general, like earlier in the story, as he says, the stars, quote, which glittered and twinkled and blazed chilly and distant and more numerous than the mind could encompass. And so, like, already there, he's already setting it up that, like, you know, stars are, you know, they're always watching. They watch the drama going on in the world, but they're always kind of, you know, distant. And they've got their own world and their own thing going on.
Yeah, and I also like the fact that he does throw in like a little bit of the science aspect. He's like, I was always told they were just big balls of gas, and I was like, oh god. Of course, I mean, we had to. And it's fascinating, like, how much these stories are supposed to, like, intertwine, but how in some cases their intersection is very limited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because obviously the witch kills two of the brothers. One, just an unfortunate incident where they all kind of met at the same time. And the other one is because he's, you know, he has to go on his side quest to go and kill the guy who murdered her brother. Blah, blah. So I just imagine that.
Funny. Because if you think about it, like, if she would have just, I think she killed him because she found, like, he was in the way of her killing the star, because he saw that she had the stone, and he was like, oh, hey, I need that stone. When really, like, she could have just, you know, talked to him about it, he could have taken the stone, she could have killed her and taken her heart, and they would have both won.
I know, it's, people, negotiation skills are really important. I would like to know them introduce you to the class that I'm starting on negotiation skills.
You could get more done if you just work together. That's the true message of the story.
She could have had the stone, she could have had the heart, Tristan would have
had a unicorn, Tristan. Maybe. Oh, yeah, he could have taken the unicorn back to Victoria, and then maybe Victoria would have been like, God damn, a unicorn. I'll marry the hell out of you. Who knows?
Yeah, I never know. Although, they do make a point. I don't know if it was just the star, but I always wondered.
Oh,
Well, it was just her, because honestly, if you think about the hairy man crossed over and stayed at his house or stayed in his barn, so maybe it was just the star would turn to stardust, but all the other creatures could pass the wall.
Well, I think they could, like, they could only pass the wall in that, like, one window of time, I think?
I don't know if that was ever established. I just know that at least in the case of Yvaine, she couldn't cross the wall or she turned to stardust.
Well, and I think they said that the witch couldn't either. I think it might be, like, those with magical abilities, maybe, or I don't know.
But then that doesn't explain Tristan, except for the fact he's half and half.
Which, yeah. You know, I was wondering about that, too, because, I mean, you know, like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's, no story is perfect. There are going to be plot holes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, because there are some things where I was like, well, is this ever really readdressed, you know, our whole heart's desire thing? And also, I mean, the fact that the witch doesn't die. I mean, that's one of those things where I was like, could he have written a sequel to this where he talks about the descendants who actually killed the witch? I was like, well, this, in the end, to me, it never really felt needed. It was, it was like, it was okay. Like, and even like, this is going to be a big conversation when we do the movie. I love the ending to the book. I really do. I hated the ending to the movie.
Yes, that's fair. That's true.
I like the fact at the end of the book, he gets to go off on adventures with Yvain, and he leaves his mother to rule. I'm like, well, that's pretty cool.
Yes. Although she's pissed off about it. She's like, what the hell?
Yeah, he sent her a message saying, have been unavoidably detained by the world. Expect us when you see us. I love that. I love that so
much. And he comes back, and they rule, and he ends up dying, and she's the stars, mm-hmm. Yvain's immortal. And it's bittersweet, and mm-hmm. she, like, they close us with her, like, looking up at the stars and everything, and mentions, of course, her broken ankle that she incurred falling to the sky. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Like, it doesn't have to be so perfectly happily ever after.
Yeah.
You know, and it's fine. And I didn't need all the mushy-gushy stuff of the movie, I guess.
Well, and I liked the ending also because of, because the witch isn't dead, and she says, you know, she actually meets up with Yvain at the end, and she's old, and she still has the scar from when the unicorn stabbed her. Yeah. Yep. And she says that, you know, what I don't understand is why I can't locate you in my mind anymore, why you're not there. I mean, you're there, but you're more like a ghost or a phantom in there. And Yvain says, could it be that the heart that you seek is no longer my own? And which is really sweet, but then the witch comes back with, like, oh, you know, he's a boy. He's probably just going to break your heart anyway. Like, you're going to regret giving him your heart. And she says, oh, here it is. Quote, you should have let me take it back then for my sisters and me. We would have been young again, well into the next age of the world. Your boy will break it or waste it or lose it. They all do.
I just feel like I now I just want to, like, hold her and say, like, who hurt you? Who hurt you?
Yes! Okay,
who
hurt you? It's okay. You're okay. Ooh, and I also have to point out that, okay, so in The Sandman, Tori Amos was Delirium. She was, you know, the inspiration for Delirium. And in this, I guess she ended up letting him live with her in her house for a month because she had been a fan since, like, before she was famous.
Well, some of her music has references to his work. So
yeah, in fact, she has like a whole album with her and a bunch of other artists with just a bunch of songs that are based on his characters and stories. Really, really good. But She let him stay with her for like a month where he wrote the first chapter of this book. And she said, all I want in return is for you to make me a tree. So the tree that ends up helping him is the Tori Amos tree. And even she is one of those characters that wasn't always a tree. She says, quote, a magician made me a tree. She was a nymph. She said, quote, I was a wood nymph, but I got pursued by a prince, not a nice prince, the other kind. And, well, you'd think a prince, even the wrong kind, would understand about boundaries, wouldn't you? Like, once again. Once again comes that theme of, like, a guy just being an asshole because he's pursuing someone.
Well, and that's something that I've always liked is he ties in a lot of old mythology. Like, that's the story of Daphne, and I believe it was Apollo who chased her, and she begged to the gods and turned her into a tree. So
right. Yes. Yeah, that's one thing I love about him and all his work is that he knows his mythology, like, inside and out.
Yeah, it's always like a nice little treat. It's to, like, sit there and go, like, oh, I know what you're pulling this from, and that's actually kind of fun.
Yeah That's one thing I really liked about the American Gods and the Anansi boys.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that. Oh, anyway.
And I think that's it. I mean, you've got all the dead brothers, you've got the witch who's actually still alive, and when Tristan dies, that's basically it. It's a good, like, nice, happy, bittersweet ending. I don't know what else to add to that, so unless you have some more stuff.
Oh, yeah, just a few things. Like, in the book, it's the little hairy guy who gives him the Babylon candle and who gives him the clothes.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't Robert De Niro.
I love the dressing where he's like, no, not that direction.
Yes. Yeah, he gets him a bunch of awesome new clothes. I think it was like in part thanks for getting him out of the Seer
Woods, and also as a payback to his dad as well, because that was his dad put him up and let him sleep in the bar, because he kind of like invaded the bar, let's be fair.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Well, and it says, quote, Tristan Thorne in Crimson and Canary was not the same man that Tristan Thorne in his overcoat and Sunday suit had been. There was a swagger to his steps, a jauntiness in his movements that had not been there before. His chin went up instead of down, and there was a glint in his eye that he had not possessed when he had worn a bowler hat.
I had some comments on the bowler hat because I had to remember what a bowler hat looked like. And then I wrote, like, oh, yeah, that's it. H.H. Holmes. Got it. And I just ended it there. But I think that also explains a little bit like why they don't recognize him when he's finally trying to cross over to the wall with Yvain before they realize that if she crosses over, she'll turn to dust. But they don't seem to recognize him. They're all like, you're not Tristan. If you are so, it's like, God damn it.
Ooh, I also like the part where he's on his own and he found some mushrooms to eat. And it says that he saw a bird, like a beautiful bird, but he didn't make any attempts to catch it because before he had tried to chase down a gray brown hare.
Oh yeah.
It says, quote, it had stopped at the edge of the forest looking at him with disdain and said, well, I hope you're proud of yourself, that's all. And it had scampered off into the long grass. I loved that so much. And it made me think of the Magicians too, which we'll be getting into later as well. But
I promise to watch the Magicians if Linda promises to watch the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, honestly, really like the Magicians on my list. I'm nobody's forcing me to do that. I actually do want to watch it.
Well, I had been wanting to finish Sabrina too, but my husband just didn't want to. He wasn't into it because he said it was like too teen drama for him. And
I can see that. It is by the creators of Riverdale, and Riverdale is crazy teen drama.
Yeah, teen drama meets like Twin Peaks. But one other thing that I wanted to mention about the book is that in the acknowledgments, he thanks Lisa Henson, daughter of Jim Henson, yay, and he said that, quote, there were people who read it as it was being written and who told me what I was doing right and what I was doing wrong. It's not their fault if I didn't listen. He mentions Lisa Henson in that, but he also mentions Diana Wynne Jones, and we will definitely be going into her work later because she's an amazing author in England who wrote a lot of books and series about like witches, and in fact she is the one who wrote the book for, and actually series for, Howl's Moving Castle.
Oh.
Yeah, so we'll be getting into her work later. And in fact, I listened to an audiobook of hers because there were people who were saying that Harry Potter was just like a ripoff or retelling of Neil Gaiman's Books of Magic. And when they talked to him about this is one of the reasons I love him, because he's so goddamn humble and amazing. He said, you know, instead of like where most authors would be like, oh yeah, that bitch totally stole my story, he said, yeah, but for that matter, you could say that my story was stolen from Diana Wynne Jones, and you know, her story was stolen from somebody else. He said it, J.K. Rowling just told it better than I did.
Damn.
Like, God damn, why are you so amazing, Neil Gaiman? Like, why? But yeah, that's all I needed to mention.
Okay.
Yay.
And I have nothing else to say.
That's stardust.
So I guess this is the time where I say, please, please, please help us out by listening, subscribing, rating, and reviewing Bedknobs and Broomflicks on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, and all other podcast platforms, especially on Apple Podcasts, because the more reviews we get, the higher up and the searches we get. So it helps other people discover us. And while you're at it, if you like us, then please tell others about us. And if you hate us, please tell others about us so they can suffer from listening to our show. It's a win-win. Come on. And remember,
spell
you could
doom.
Remember, you could find Bedknobs and Broomflicks on Facebook and on Twitter at Broomflicks. That's BROOMFLICKS. And you could write to us at broomflicks@gmail.com. And while I'm at it, I wanted to give some shout outs to some amazing people for leaving us such amazing reviews. That includes Katie and Oti from For Your Reference Pod, another great one. And they're freaking amazing. Also, Ashlett, I hope that's how you pronounce it. It's Ashlett.
I mean, yeah, I told you, I'm leaving it up to you on how you pronounce the names. I am not going to try to embarrass myself more than I already do.
Okay, I'm just going to have to tell you what I told Jenny in the last episode. We're just going to have to pretend we have all the confidence in the world. Like, yes, it is definitely pronounced Ashlett. Thank you so much, Ashlett. And also, thank you to Fortress of Fantasy, or no, duh, Fortress of Fandom podcast.
Okay, that's on you on that one.
That is all on me. It's been a long day, you guys.
She was yawning when we got on to record. I'm like, are you okay?
She's yes.
Like, yeah. I'm tired. I'm like, okay.
I just returned to the working world and it is really having a toll on my brain. But the Fortress of Fandom, I've actually listened to a couple of their episodes and they are pretty goddamn good too. I left a review for them. They left a review for me. They're amazing people. Also, ODPH for also giving us a wonderful, beautiful review. Thank you so much, you guys. We just can't express just how grateful we are and how much it means to us. You can find me on the weekly podcast, Cage's Kiss, the Nicolas Cage podcast. And I believe this week we just covered Knowing, and we just celebrated our 1 year birthday with a special interview and flashback episode. So, Jane, where can people find you?
I just want to say, I was really hoping you'd say we celebrate with a cake of Nicolas Cage's face. And I was like, please, please. No, okay, never mind.
I ate his nose.
Find me trying to string donuts onto narwhals' horns.
Oh my god. Yes, please.
Thank my kid for that one, because when I was writing up some stuff for the podcast earlier, he was sitting next to me and he had like this like collection of stickers from a party he went to, and they're all like narwhals. And so he's sticking all these like narwhal stickers on my laptop. Aww. So my laptop base all has these little narwhal stickers, but I started looking at them and like one's wearing a hula skirt, and then there's like one with like a donut stuck to his horn,
oh my
and
God.
I'm like, eating a donut. I'm like, I am never removing these. These are so cool.
Okay, I'm about to ruin it for you. My mom is a huge fan of Rod Stewart, and I found out that he was once arrested because he was drunk in a hotel, I think it was a hotel lobby, and he was naked, and he was trying to figure out how many donuts he could fit on his dick. And so me and my old friend Amanda, we used to describe, like, we would rate men as like how many donuts. We would say, that man, many, many donuts.
I thought you were gonna ruin narwhals for me, and I'm like, nope, I'm okay, I'm good. You didn't ruin narwhals for me. I thought you were, then we started talking Hooray. About like Rod Stewart. I was like, oh no, what did he do to a narwhal? No, narwhal, no.
So I'm sorry, to all the listeners, but now you can rate men by their donuts. I'd like to thank Doug Walters and Red Wire Black Wire for allowing us to use their song Compass. You should check out their music. They're amazing. And his new band, Oddness. Jesus. Good stuff.
I'm still thinking about the donuts.
Sorry. I want some donuts.
Now I'm thinking of, like, with. I'm thinking, like, all those poor donuts.
All those donuts that went to waste.
I know, and I'm thinking, we're like, God damn it, you waste of a donut.
That might be what Homer calls a forbidden donut.
Anyways, I guess, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No.
Okay, I'll sign off now before I start going on.
What are we doing next week? Next time? Okay,
well, I think we kind of alluded to it already, but we'll be doing Stardust the movie, where I am worried that we might make some people angry, because, yeah, the reviews for it are really good, but we love the book.
I enjoyed it, but we're going to be joined by Sunny from Book of Lies podcast, so.
Yay!
Our first guest, and she's amazing, so I'm really happy about it.
I get to meet Sunny! I've only heard about her in passing. I'm just like, there's a person named Sunny who's coming to the podcast, okay.
And she's just amazing. I love her. And
I will be the judge of that.
Oh, you will too.
I know if I will.
And until then, what's that got to do with my knob?
Stardust.
After my first few episodes, some of my newfound fans called me a lore master, which was an honor and so epically cool. But the thing is, I desire to be known as THE lore master. So, this is the tale of the rise of an epic podcast that critics say is redefining a genre. The tale of a man who decided that his calling in life was to give a future to the past. The saga of Arjun, your lore master. Come dream with me as we go deep into our stories. If you think you've been taken to a battlefield before, I assure you, you're mistaken. So take a deep breath, let it out slowly, put some smoke in the air if you choose, and prepare to let your mind flow to my voice as we go deep. Welcome to Deep into History, available everywhere.